Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 1st, unbelievably, October 1st, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest and prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, Mr. D.R. Tucker?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. And we're happy to be joined by author and climate hawk and all-around smart person, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
Thank you for that nice introduction. How are you?
Very well, very well. So, guys, this past 10 days or so, there was an article published in a rather esoteric academic journal. I won't even try to remember exactly what it is. Nature Geoscience, which, while it seems very dry and kind of boring, in fact, is an interesting topic. There's about 20 guys, I think most of them are in England, 20 people, most of them in England. They put together a study premised on the idea of asking how much carbon dioxide can still be emitted into the air if we are going to meet the Paris Accord's intention of keeping the change in the global temperature below the increase in global temperatures below 1.5 degrees. We're gonna try and chew through that because it's quite a paper. The conclusion of that paper says that surprisingly we have significantly more time, on the order of I think they said 20 years before we hit an ultimate limit. And that we need to, like, get on the case that there actually is some hope. So, Mariah, let me ask you. Let me put the ball in your court. I've given it one pass. What's your you step through and try to explain what you, because it was not, it's not an easy paper to understand in the interpretation.
No.
But it's important because it can get misused. It can either get misused by the bad guys, or if it turns out to be true, it's good news for the good guys. Right? We need to understand what it is. So tell me.
I mean, you know, I think the bottom line of this article was that I think even for me, before this article, it was slightly hopeless because it was sort of like, if we want to, you know, if we want to limit the global warming temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, we only have 10 years to do it, and we need to start now, and we need to work like mad to get there. And I'm looking at our current administration's lack of climate initiative and saying, there's no way we're going to get there in 10 years. So that was sort of the prior notion kind of developed from the IPCC and so on and so forth, and some of the data that they talked about in the article. This article says, well, actually, we may have more like 40 years before to do this. So we have a little bit more time. And one thing they said very specifically was that this 40-year goal is formidable, but not inconceivable. And what they're saying there is that the 10-year goal was inconceivable. And this is actually something that's still going to be very, very hard. But if we start now and work really assiduously over the next 40 years, we can do it. And they also said that this distinction matters because if it were already completely impossible to achieve the Paris ambition, many people might argue there was no point in pursuing the efforts in the first place. So this is actually really, really good news.
And if I were to jump in, I mean, it's very good news, but it must, I mean, there's a couple, from the scientific method, there's a couple of points to be made. One is that people have disagreed with the optimism. Good scientists have said, oh, your assumptions are wrong. And so the scientific discussion about the ultimate robustness of this decision is still in the works, right? So this is a paper. These guys said, well, here's our study. And maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, how they got to where they are. Not everyone agrees, but if the paper is close to the truth, then you're right. We have I said 20 years at the current emission levels, and these people are saying 40 years if we go on a linear downward track of 4% carbon emissions per year for the next 40 years, right?
Yeah.
And I think the other important point is that to be made is that this paper shows that scientists are not in some secret cabal of conspiracy to make money from their grants and not challenge their own findings. All right, here's someone who's come out with what you might think is a throws everything on its head and says, oh, everything's not as bad as you thought, or challenges the prevailing wisdom, and here the scientists have done it. Right, Mariah? I mean, are those true statements?
Right. Yeah, I mean, so I think that it's so just some background on some of really the terms in this paper. They're doing an analysis on carbon budget, which is essentially the same as carbon emissions, which is carbon dioxide equivalent. These are all words that are sort of interchanged to mean the same thing. And carbon dioxide equivalent allows us to incorporate other greenhouse gases like methane and
sulfur hexafluoride and all kinds
of
crazy stuff. Yeah,
right, exactly. Because different greenhouse gases have different global warming and climate change impacts. So they call that carbon emissions as sort of a blanket, and it kind of allows it to be normalized so you can compare everything mm-hmm. together, carbon dioxide equivalent. So if you hear carbon emissions or carbon budget, that's what it's referring to. And that's different than, for example, Bill McKibben's 350 parts per million, which is the amount of carbon dioxide we need to bring it back down to 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the air. Because carbon dioxide it persists much longer than, say, methane or some of the other greenhouse gases.
But just in my understanding, the distinction between the carbon budget and talk about annual emissions rates is that the carbon budget is basically it's the equivalent of your savings rate that you're putting into your bank account and how much money is in your bank account. Right? Your bank account can be large or small, and that's the equivalent to how much carbon dioxide is in the air, and how much money you save each month is roughly equivalent to how much carbon emissions you make each month, right? And so the carbon budget says there's an absolute number of X number of gigatons that we as a species can put in the air. And how soon are we going to, will we have accumulated that much carbon dioxide emissions, right?
Right, exactly. And of course, it's directly correlated with how much the temperature will go up.
Right. And that's and I think that in this paper, what the authors did was to look, they posed the question, as a precursor, let me just say that the Paris Agreement calls for what they call stock taking every 5 years. So that every 5 years, everybody gets together and decides how much is the planet warmed, how much emissions have happened. We're all going to increase our ambition. These are all buzzwords, and cut our emissions rates even more. And so that in that context, it becomes much more important to look in detail at, you know, how much are we going to need to cut in 2020, right? That's the first five-year stock taking after the 2015 event. And so these authors looked at the amount of global warming in, you know, sort of in detail, and at small differences between the amount of global warming and the amount of carbon dioxide we've already emitted. It said, gee, if I square all that up, there's a little bit of discrepancy, and that gives us some headroom. Right, Mariah? Is that kind of a fair statement, that they were looking at these small differences, and they project out much bigger because of the time scale of the Paris Accord, right?
Right, right. Yeah, there's a big sort of uncertainty range, and it's hard to narrow that down.
Right, and these guys have tried to do that, and they find good news, right?
Yeah,
and of course,
yeah.
That's where the true scientific debate comes, is how confident are they in these small discrepancies between models and observations that they're taking advantage of to project out the fact that we have more time. I mean, I certainly hope we have more time. It would be, you know, unlikely good news, right? If you say, okay, you don't have to worry quite as much. All right, no, you have to worry the same amount, but you have more time to take action, Right.
Right, right. And it's actually an unattainable goal, whereas it wasn't really quite attainable before.
Right. And so these guys have put up, DR, I'm going to ask you in a minute about the reaction of the skeptics, I mean, the deniers, let's call it. But the people who wrote the paper put up a defense of the paper in the Guardian, Guardian newspaper, against the attacks from the various kinds of deniers. And they put up a blog that kind of explains in layman's terms what the paper was about. Right, Mariah? We've got that link somewhere. And, I mean, that's good because the paper itself is kind of, I don't know what to write, turgid, unreadable. It's a very hard paper to read. You really have to want to read it a lot. But the blog is quite readable and is in human terms. Given the fact that honest-to-God scientists have come out and said, oh, maybe our dire predictions from last year were maybe overstated, we actually have a little more time. Tell me, DR, what was the reaction of the people that want to divide, exploit, and destroy the planet for their greedy, greedy bank accounts?
Well, as two of the scientists who worked on the paper, Miles Allen and Richard Miller, noted, the piece was attacked by, among others, James Dellingpole of Breitbart News, who basically used it to smear the IPCC and to suggest that the IPCC was making things up and that other climate scientists were making things up. And as the two scientists note, you know, they've never disputed the basic science. All they were saying was that we have a bit more time to address this, not that this is an exaggerated threat. They basically go on to say that, you know, for as careful as they were to try to make that point clear, their writings and their words were basically seized upon by deniers. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show you how, you know, it just goes all the way back to the ClimateGate matter, how innocuous words were taken out of context and spread all over Fox to basically, you know, aid the merchants of doubt, so to speak.
And I guess it's important as climate hawks, as you say that, DR, it occurs to me, it's important for us to honestly discuss all the information, because these people will try to misuse it. And it's important for us to know what the facts are and be conversant with it so that we can, not the three of us, but just climate hawks in general, that guys like Dellingpole and Breitbart News will just essentially distort to their heart's content. And if you don't pay attention, or if climate hawks are somehow unwilling to discuss things like this paper because it potentially is an embarrassment, say, oh, you were Chicken Little yesterday and now you get more time, right? That's not the right deal, right? We should be honestly engaging with the discussion, because this paper is not in any way, shouldn't give you much comfort, right? It just says that if we work like crazy for the next 40 years and do things that have been nearly impossible, we might still save the planet, right? Mariah, they were talking about a 4.6% reduction in carbon emissions every year for the next 40 years. That's what the paper called for. And they said that a 4.6% reduction had only happened at the end of the, for a brief period at the end of the collapse of the Soviet Union, and a brief period in 2008, I think, when the markets collapsed, right? So the human ability to even do something as simple as reduce carbon by 4.5% for the next 40 years is an enormous challenge, right? But yeah, it is something we can at least contemplate doing, especially given, you know, that in 40 years, the guy in the White House will be a dim memory, and textbooks will have condemned his name. What are the Christians used to talk about, Emperor Diocletian, who persecuted all the Christians? They say, may God crush his bones. I wouldn't say that about Mr. Trump, but, you know, there you go. All right. So there you go. There's any last words on this paper? I mean, it's a great, if you can't sleep at night, it's a great way to try and put yourself to sleep, to try and read this paper, right?
Yeah. My take home message from that was definitely, it is now formidable, but not unattainable. You know, that is the key difference there. And that will make me sleep better at night. It is formidable, but not unattainable.
I'm going to write that down, because I think that's the name of the show. Formidable, but not unattainable. I'll have to make sure I spell check that. All right. Well, look, thank you very much. DR, you got anything else on it? You're done with the Mr. Dellingpole, right?
But going back to the thing about how fast, you know, we have to move, even if we do have, you know, a bit more lead time, so to speak, I think we always have to move as quickly as possible. And I think back to, you know, one of the underrated environmental songs that Madonna and Justin Timberlake did about the climate crisis, in which the refrain was, "We only have 4 minutes to save the world."
Okay, so DR, we gotta go. We're gonna go in 2 seconds, dear listener. But somebody was telling me there's an article, there's a movie with Jennifer Lawrence called Mother. Mm-hmm. It's a horror movie, but
which is perceived to be a climate change metaphor, and because it underperformed, the deniers are all over it, as you might imagine.
Well, exactly. That somehow it's not quite a morality play, but the Jennifer Lawrence character is Mother Earth. And I mean, I haven't seen it, and I don't like horror movies, so I probably never will see it. Mm-hmm. Just like I probably never really watched Game of Thrones. But if you're into horror movies and you're a climate hawk, there's your chance. All right, we're gonna stop there. I will impose by virtue of the fact that I've got the button here. I'm gonna stop. We're gonna have to stop now. What we'll do is we'll put up links to everything we discussed, or at least most of the stuff we discussed, at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find a link to the show on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction, plus links to all kinds of interesting other information, activities at MCAN, and general information. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and a bunch of other directories. You can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thank you for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Hang in there. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.